Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
Everybody, I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn Extra webinar. I'm pleased to welcome Richard Brown, Amenity Sales Manager for Germinal GB. Today, Richard will explore how the future of disease management on golf greens is reliant on frequent overseeding, using resilient and disease-resistant bent grasses, and how to get the best from them. With almost 30 years' experience in Amenity, turf grass and landscaping sectors, Richard is well known to greenkeepers across the UK. His career in the amenity sector started at the tender age of 14 when he began working at a Lincolnshire plant nursery. After earning his degree in horticulture, he worked on a turf farm before living and working in Australia for 2 years. Richard joined Germinal in 2002 and is responsible for overseeing all aspects of the company's amenity business, from working with growers to liaising with the breeding program at the Institute of Biological, Environmental and Rural Sciences, and with overseas seed breeders to select and develop new and exciting grass cultivars. Richard is FACTS qualified and will happily talk at length about how to get the best results from golf and sports pitch specific grass seed mixtures. On that, I will hand over to Richard.
Hello everyone, and thank you for coming this afternoon. As Sammy said, I'm going to talk to you this afternoon about what I like to call preventative overseeding. So firstly, what do I mean by preventative overseeding? Well, essentially, in my nearly 20 years in the seed trade, greenkeepers have aspired to increase the amount of favourable grasses in their greens and decrease the amount of unfavourable grasses. And specifically there, we're talking about, in terms of favourable grasses, although we're talking about bent grasses today, we're talking about bent grasses and fescues, and not non-favourable grasses, we're essentially talking about paraannua. So why have they deemed to do this? Well, generally what they're looking for is greater playability, better aesthetic look to the green, but also greater disease tolerance. And they're promoting greater disease tolerance by increasing the amount of favourable grasses that are more resistant to diseases, in particular Microdochium patch, or as we'll call it today, Fusarium, and decreasing paraannua, which is of course most susceptible to that disease. Now of course all grasses are susceptible, but paraannua is most susceptible. And that's been the aspiration in the last 20 years. So why aren't we at the point where greenkeepers are winning this battle and generally managing majority favourable greens with majority favourable grasses in? Well, I think there's many reasons for that, but I certainly think that in the last 10 years, the ability to overseed effectively has accelerated, better machinery, better understanding of techniques. But I think also we have to be honest with ourselves and say, well, the nemesis here, paraannua, does create a good putting surface. You can get a good putting surface, you can mow down to 3 mil, and if you accept the fact that you can work with its frailties, vis-a-vis feed it, give it plenty of water, keep it alive, you can work with that to a greater degree. But unfortunately, as we all know, the times they are changing. This says there, that approach and that safety blanket relied upon largely a good amount of quality curative fungicides and quality curative active ingredients. And we all know that that's been taken away from us. And although there is good preventive fungicides on the marketplace, we at Germinal argue that the best point to start prevention from is to be managing more favorable grasses in your greens and start the prevention process with the varieties and species that you're managing, but also manage them in a low input way that plays to the strength of your favorable grasses, plays against the strength of paraannua, and indirectly against the strength of diseases such as Microdochium patch or Fusarium. So whereas it used to be an aspiration to increase the favourable grasses in your greens, it's now an absolute necessity. So without teaching Granny to suck eggs, we'll quickly just review Microdokium patch or Fusarium. So as we all know, the spores like a thatch layer. They like to spread in a thatch layer. It likes conditions, temperatures between 0 and 15 degrees centigrade. It likes low light levels and little air movements. And so prevailing conditions are, in the autumn, traditionally in this country, generally starting in late August in northern parts and then, you know, later on down in the south of the country. But as we all know, unfortunately, those conditions can prevail at any time of the year. But crucially, it particularly, annual meadowgrass is susceptible. So we're going to look at overseeding today and overseeding with resistant varieties and ways that you can manage your sward to be resistant. I'm not going to dwell on dew removal or aeration. You all know about that. You're all doing that. I'm going to touch briefly on fertilizing because that has a direct correlation with cultivar selection. We're going to talk about overseeding, the timing of overseeding, and then we're going to look at selecting resistant cultivars. So fertilizing appropriately. I've won some records here for most attractive PowerPoint slide, but essentially we all know that at times of high disease pressure, mainly later on in the autumn and mainly when, you know, I would say the majority of people are still doing their renovations, you want to be applying, you know, low nitrogen fertilizers, possibly, you know, slightly higher in iron, magnesium, because you want to be discouraging fleshy young growth, which is going to be more susceptible to disease. But that in itself, that has a link to varietal selection. So if you're trying to combat Fusarium and trying to combat Pyrannua by running a lower nutrient regime, you need to be trying to manage varieties of either brown top or creeping bentgrass that can proliferate at those low nutrient rates. And the long and short of it is there is a difference between in varieties there. There's a range of, not all varieties, it's not inherently the same for the species. There is a varietal difference. So quickly, we talk about brown top bentgrass. We have two brown top bentgrasses in our portfolio. And this isn't going to become a selling pitch, but we have two brown top bentgrasses in our portfolio, Aberroyal and Aberregal. Now, both of those are UK bred, but crucially, they were selected with low nutrient tolerance in mind. So Aberroyal was selected from the mountain regions of West Wales, where there was no formal input in terms of fertilizer there. It was growing on a very thin substrate and it was being grazed ever so short by sheep. Similarly, Aberregal was in very similar conditions, but selected from the South Downs. So we know inherently those varieties are low nutrient varieties. And we know that from anecdotal evidence, having sold them for 20 years. So that's what we can say about those. But perhaps more controversially, lots of you will be familiar with the fact that Germinal has been talking about creeping bentgrass over the last five years, really. We've really started to sort of talk about this a lot. And not only are we talking about creeping bentgrass for the UK, but we've been mixing creeping bentgrass with brown top bent and offering mixtures of the two species. Now, when we first started to do this, we had our detractors, and a lot of people said, well, you can't do that. Firstly, they said, well, creeping bent is not applicable for the UK. It needs too much nutrients. You've got to throw the baby out of the bathwater and change your routine completely. And then they said, and of course, because of that, you can't manage it in the same sward of brown top bent because it needs much higher nutrient conditions. Well, I would agree wholeheartedly with that with regards to some older creeping bentgrass species. But as I said, varietal selection is hugely important here. And I'll just draw, you can look all these research pieces up later, but this study here by Christian M. Baldwin at Mississippi State University, essentially he took many commercially available creeping bentgrass varieties, and between April and October, he made weekly applications of N to those varieties, accumulating in 49 kilos of N, 147 kilos of N, and 294 kilos of N. And what he found was that there was huge differences in the persistence of those varieties and the ability of those varieties to give good agronomic traits and pliability under the lower nutrient conditions, so 49 kilos of N. And on the basis that you're in the UK, most of us are probably trying to manage on between 50 and 100 kilos of N. He concluded that the two most notable cultivars were 007, which of course is on our stable, but also a variety called Sharp. But what he included was that when creeping bentgrass cultivar is an important selection criteria if reduction in N is a relevant consideration. So what I'm saying is, if you want to take the advantages of a creeping bent, which you can, and they are many, and we have many people using them in the UK, and we have many people seeing that the long and short of it is a creeping bentgrass will have stronger lateral growth. They do have higher shoot density than a brown top bent. They do have the ability, generally, over and above brown top bentgrasses, to outcompete Paranua. We have people who are seeing them punch into Paranua and proliferate through those patches of power. So if you want to take advantages of those traits, you need to select a variety that you can manage at low nutrient rates, but still take advantage. So you can't just take any creeping bent and say, well, that's the one I'm going to use, because then you will be at odds, and you will be trying to, in order to keep that creeping bent alive, you will be kowtowing and sticking extra fertilizer on, which is going to play into the hands of what you're trying to push out, which is the power and ultimately the disease. So there we come on to overseeding. So overseeding to try and increase the favourable grasses in your green and reduce the need for fungicides and have a more disease-resistant green. Well, bang it in and keep banging it in. That's the first point there. And I can all hear everyone sort of rolling their eyes and saying, well, you would say that, wouldn't you? Well, yes, I would say that, because you are up against a prolific overseeder. Paranua is overseeding all of the time. Between March and October, it is throwing seed into your green. Now, at different times, the germination of that seed will be more prolific, and we'll turn to the next slide yet. But in order to keep a pace with that, if you really want to start looking at out-competing Paranua in your greens, you've got to say, I'm going to take this on. I'm going to throw more overseed more frequently of bentgrass, and I'm going to increase the amount I'm overseeding. And we would advocate at least 100 kilos of bent a year, and at least twice, but possibly three or four times a year. Now, it doesn't mean you have to go with two big overseeds. You could spread that and do light overseeds throughout the year, and we'll look at that with regards to timing later on. Now, I just needed to check where I was there. How do I go back? Now, technology is letting me down. There we go. So let's look at timing of overseeding. So early autumn overseeding. I would proffer that this is when most people are currently doing their overseeding at the time. What's good about overseeding then? Well, your play is reduced. So you've got reduced play, so you've got reduced playing pressure, so it's a good time to do it in terms of play on your course and club members. And you've got good temperatures of germination. Well, I put a question mark there, because you have, if your bent grass needs preferably between 14 and 25 degrees centigrade in order to germinate. And of course, the warmer it is, the quicker that process is going to happen. So if you are overseeding at that time of year, if you're meant to do that in mid-September, then you've got good temperatures there. But if you're increasingly getting pushed further and further back into October, then the temperatures are going away from you and your percentage germination is going to be lower. And also at that time, if we flip to the next slide here, this is a study done at Maryland University near New York by James Kowinski. But don't worry about the dates on here so much, but look at the temperatures. Essentially, what he's saying here is that Paranua germinates prolifically between 20 and 10 degrees centigrade. So, but there's also a correlation between when that germinates and when moisture is readily available, which is generally in the autumn time. So you are getting a greater germination and competition from Paranua in your greens in the fall, in the autumn, in the late part of the year, when you're trying to overseas. So the later you go, the greater competition you've got from Paraannua, and especially if your germination of your bent grass is slowing down, if that makes sense to you. You've also got vigorous growth of the existing sward. So you've got the sward that you're sowing into is actively growing as well. So you've got competition there. Like I say, you've got the perfect temperature of Paraannua, but crucially as well, the new seedlings that are coming up, you've put new seedlings in there, you get a good take, but they are appearing just as your disease pressure is high. So you're putting young fleshy seedlings into an environment where you're most likely to get fusarium, which of course comes in through the edges of the seedlings, and that's how it spreads into the plant. So it's not that that time of year is wrong, but the point I'm trying to make is that, and we'll go on and look at other times of year, there is mortality here as a consequence of doing it this time of year. So if anyone's sort of labouring under misapprehension that this is exactly the best time to do it, I think we'll find that actually you'll get probably the same amount of take at other times of the year, because there'll be other reasons for mortality and other reasons for success at those times of year. So it is valid to oversow at other times of year apart from in the early autumn. So if we look at summer overseeding, what's good about summer overseeding? Well, you're going to get good germination of your bent grass. Your temperatures are going to be high. And if we, again, if we talk back to 20 years ago when I started in the seed trade, well, the other reason a lot of people overseeded late in the year was because, you know, less people had an effective, comprehensive irrigation system then. Whereas now, if we argue that most people have got an effective, comprehensive irrigation system, the only parameter you can't control is temperature. Yeah, and so if you can take advantage, but you can control moisture, so if you could take advantage of those high temperatures in the summer, then you're going to get a good quick take of your bent grass. And also, we saw on the previous slide that little germination of power seed occurs north of 20 degrees centigrade. So in the height of summer in the UK currently, now, where have I gone with this? In the height of summer in the UK currently, if you can be managing to put seed in those warm July and August months, you're taking advantage of a period when you've got very low competition from Paraannua. New seedlings will be hardened off ahead of the disease pressure season. So you've got good hardened seeds with lignin in, stiff cell walls. You've got a good hard seed. You've also got an established plant with a good root system. So just a healthier sward is more able to withstand fusarium attack. Now, I can see there will be issues here. Pressure of play is high. New seedlings potentially will be outcompeted by the existing sward, and you've got a decreased chance of good seed soil contact there. But again, you've got to weigh this up against, but I have got good high temperatures. I have got, you know, probably a higher percentage take than I would get in the autumn. So I can expect, I can accept a bit of mortality through play and wear. Now, I don't have to be doing hugely disruptive things to the green here. I could just, following a light verticutting, a sorrel roll, I can just top dress and drag mat a small amount of seed in. And the other point I'd make here is, again, there is a varietal selection issue here. And I have to concede it, being a big fan of brown top bent, but I think if there is a grass that will tolerate and proliferate being mown at 3 mil from the get-go, then creeping bent grass is a mil better at that than brown top bent. I think brown top bent, you four, but I think it's slightly mown. So if you're gonna oversow with a grass into that green in the summer and then hammer it and expect it to proliferate at 3 mil, I think again, you know, you need to be sort of potentially looking at creeping bent grasses and wondering if they are, you know, an option for you. And again, you don't have to go with all creeping bent grass, you can do a mixture of the two, but you know, look at that and consider that option and think, you know, which species is best for me to gain success in that regime. So then we look at spring overseeding. So again, if you're overseeding in the spring, you've got a chance to get ahead of the main playing season. So of course, playing pressure is less, so we can get seed established at that time of year, then you've got a good chance of that hardening off and proliferating before you get the main playing pressure and mowing heights need to come down. Of course, the first question here is, well, what about germination temperatures? You know, will it germinate at those temperatures? Well, again, we've got a study here, a very recent study. This was done on creeping bent, but if you read the study here, it advocates that the lowest minimum temperatures for creeping bent also apply to brown top bents, although more study needs to be done. I mean, we can never do enough. What they tried to determine here at the American Society of Agronomy and Science was the germination of 21 commercially available creeping bent grass varieties under suboptimal conditions. And they essentially gave these varieties four different germination temperatures, which equate to an ambient air temperature of 4.4 degrees, an ambient air temperature of 7 degrees, one of 9.7 and one of 15.5. Well, make no bones about it, they all did better at 15.5 degrees. But what they concluded was that at 4.5 degrees, there was very minimal germination. It didn't work exceptionally well. But at 7 degrees, you were getting 50% germination of many of the species at about the between 12 and 15 day mark. Now, if you look at that, if you look at the ambient air temperature in the UK, and I know it will differ up and down the country, but you know your own air temperatures, then in March, it was 8.5 degrees in 2017. In 2018, it was only 4.9. But in 2019, it was 8.9. And then once you get into April, it was 9 degrees. So it's perfectly valid to say bent grass will germinate in my greens in the UK at that time of year. And again, you don't have to do hugely disruptive overseeds here. This can be following verticutting or dimple rolling. You can put seed in and you can get effective germination at that time of year. Well, I could hear you all saying, well, you say effective germination, but you've said there that only 50% germinate. Yes, but again, you're offsetting that with only 50% might germinate, but at other times of year, I'm getting greater mortality. You've got to weigh this up. You might only get 50% germination, but of that 50%, those seeds will proliferate and do far better potentially than they would at other times of year. So again, you're just accepting that you can get a take, but by sowing at three or four different times of the year, what you're doing is you're keeping the foot to the metal and you're continuing to increase your population of bent grass, rather than saying I'm going to throw all my eggs in one basket, do it at that time of year, and then expect those plants to just compete vegetatively for the rest of the year. Now, if I go back to this slide again, what they're proving here, and if we look at 007 again, what they're saying here is that on 15 days, just over the 15 day mark, 50% of 007 was germinated. Declaration was the best in the study, but then Memorial, you're looking at over 15 days and you've only got 25% germination. So again, what they're saying is there is a varietal difference when it comes to many traits, and suboptimal germination would be another one. So if you are thinking, well, I'll try overseeding in the spring, you need to be asking these questions. Which is there a variety that's actually going to be better for me in this instance, or do I just continue using the one I've already used? So ask these questions, make your seedsman work, test him. This is what I'd like to do. What's your best option for this particular situation? And that brings me on probably to our most controversial suggestion. And many of you may have read it on our website and in the press over the last couple of years, but cold seeding. We've done a lot of work on this with one or two golf courses and anecdotal evidence. But we have found that if you oversow with either with brown top bent, we've had success with brown top and creeping bent and pure creeping bent. And we've had success right from the south coast right up into the northern part of England. If you overseed in between November and February, we suggest you go just a little bit deeper, about 6 to 8 mil. You can put that seed in there. It will wait for temperatures to reach that point. And then you can get good germination very early on in the season. So rather than react to a temperature and go in the spring, you can put this in when playing pressure is low, when you've got not many people on the course, and you can get a take in the spring. This on the left-hand side is a course here in Kent. This was sown in November 2018, and this was early March 2019. And you can see the lines there of forefront greens coming through, and that's ahead of any main playing on that green. You're building a seed bank. Again, this is not without risks. There is a risk that a certain percentage will rot. But again, you've got to weigh that up against potential seedling mortality through wear and an aggressive treatment to the green at other times of the year. And there's also, there is a risk of secondary dormancy. So if you, germination begins, or the seed begins to prime, and then you get very cold periods, you can get what's called secondary dormancy. But that won't nobble every seed, it will just nobble a percentage. But you know, it's not without risk, but we have had huge success. What we'd say is, you know, open your mind to it. Perhaps try it on one green. The experiment is relatively inexpensive when it comes to seed. And this is a point I was going to make back at the initial overseeding slide. I was thinking people were saying, well, brilliant, you're saying 100 kilos. Well, where am I going to get that money from, Big Shot? Well, every time you used to spray those greens with a curative fungicide, such as Chipco, you were looking at, what, £800-900 an application? Well, if you can move to a point where you're not using those fungicides, but if you could, it's very easy within your budget, if you really want to transfer £900 to £1,000 worth of budget. And £900 to £1,000 worth of budget is going a long way to get you that extra 50 kilos of bent grass. So there is room in your budget to do this if you really want to, I would proffer. So we talked about overseeding and when to do it and when to put those seeds in. And also we've spoken about, you know, trying to select varieties which are going to play to your strength in terms of, you know, out-competing power and out-competing disease. But then in an ideal world, wouldn't it be best if the varieties you were putting in actually had inherent fusarium resistance as well? And just want to go over a couple of slides here. This is a trial we did. Aberegal, we began to see at Ivers in Aberystwyth with our breeding station. We began to see anecdotal in our breeding plots. There was indications there that this was fusarium resistance. It got less fusarium than other bent grasses we had in there and other new numbers, selections coming through. We wanted to prove this unequivocally, so we did a trial in the winter of 2011-2012 at the SGRI. And we took 8 different commercially available bent grass cultivars. We inoculated them with fusarium and took the results. Well, the trial was not an absolute success, and this is documented in our catalogue, in that we couldn't get the trial sufficiently inoculated with fusarium to make you confident to pick a winner, to make a confident assessment across the whole trial. But what the SGRI trial did conclude is that Aberegal, along with one other, where indications were taken, had higher than average fusarium resistance. And here we have the Aberegal plot in the middle, and you have 2 plots either side of other bent grasses in the trial, and you can clearly see where the bent grass, where the fusarium has been on the other plots, but it ceases as it goes into the Aberegal plot, which demonstrates to us what we know, that Aberegal has higher than average fusarium resistance.
Did you know that Bigger, alongside our partners ICL, offers a fantastic continue to learn scholarship opportunity for our members? The scholarship invites 5 Bigger members along to attend the Continue to Learn at BTME education programme. Worth approximately £500, the scholarship comprises 3 nights' hotel accommodation and 15 hours worth of education. The application process takes place during July, so head to the member opportunities section of the Bigger website to find out more. Links are in the show notes.
Similarly, we have a new brown top bent in our portfolio this year called Musket. It's an American bred variety, but we're selecting, when we take these varieties, we're selecting for disease resistance almost above all else. And we liked the fact that Musket had good fusarium resistance. And this data here is taken from the BSPB Close Mown trial in 2016. Well, this is part of the information you get as a company when you've got varieties in trial. It's not information that's published in the full booklet, hence I can't show you all the other varieties on there. But what I can say, I can show you this data, and I can show you that amongst all the varieties in that trial that year, Musket had where there was fusarium, it was scored, and Musket had a high score for fusarium resistance. And like I say, there's other varieties in there as well. So there'll be other people out there that can let you know the rate at which they expect their variety to be fusarium resistant. But it just goes to show as well, there is a difference, a varietal difference, when it comes to disease resistance. So, you know, ask these questions. And then finally, I would say there is safety in numbers. We have increasingly looked to bring mixtures of brown top bents, mixtures of brown top bents and creeping bents to the market, and mixtures of creeping bents. And the reason we're doing this is, if you are sowing more than one variety, then you are increasing your genetic diversity when you're overseeding. And with greater genetic diversity comes a greater propensity for that mixture to be resistant to disease. It also gives it a greater propensity for one or two of those varieties to particularly like your soil type, your prevailing weather conditions. Because unless you do, we all know we have one variety, well, that does very well here. But unless you have the time and inclination to do a PhD on every single one, to a certain extent, you are still taking potluck. So with a mixture, you are increasing your chances of success. And an example I would use is, if I had the best variety for wear tolerance on the sports, the perennial ryegrass sports list, and I went to a top premiership groundsman and said, well, this is top of the list, therefore you should be using it as a monoculture on your pitch. He'd say, well, no, I want three or four varieties at least. And the reason he wants three or four varieties is for exactly the same reason as I've said. The reason we haven't done it traditionally with bentgrass is because there's less bred, it's a slower process, and so we generally talk about a single variety. It's just a market thing rather than what's potentially best for you. So we're trying to increase the numbers of creeping bentgrasses we've got so that we can offer a greater choice to you. The other point I would make here as well is, again, with creeping bentgrasses and brown top bents, and with a view to the UK market, the long and short of it is, we breed brown top bents at Aberystwyth in Wales. There's one or two other people around the world breeding brown top bents, but you can count them on one hand. So it's not such an arms race. Creeping bent is hugely bred in the US, and there is far more money and breeding programs and proliferation there. So that's where the progress is. If you're breeding that much quicker and you're breeding that much faster of varieties, you're more likely that that species is going to progress to the point where it's solving our problems quicker than poor old brown top bent. So, you know, as a nation, we risk closing our door on a completely viable option if we just think, well, creeping bent's not for us, we must stick to that. So, you know, that's just a point I'd make there. So, in conclusion, how are you going to increase your favourable grasses in your greens to ultimately be managing a more disease-resistant sward through being able to manage that in a low-nutrient way? Well, as I said, firstly and foremost, you've got to be taking this on. You've got to take the Elliott Ness approach. I don't know if anyone's been in touch with you. You've got to say, if you're putting two of mine in the morgue, in the hospital, I'm going to put two of yours in the morgue. I'm going at this. I'm taking it personally. I'm going to sow more seed, and I'm going to take this on and try and gain results. And if all you did was that with the variety you're currently using, brilliant, that's going to have an impact. But if you can then look to use varieties that play, that you can, that do well on lower nutrients, lower moistures, and play to the strength of those varieties against the strength of Paraannua and ultimately disease, you're going to get there even quicker. And if you can then say, well, I'm sticking a greater number in, but if you can make sure that greater number are inherently disease resistance, well, you're really starting to win the battle, and you're really starting to get there. You've got that three-way approach. And that, in a nutshell, is what I got to talk about today. I hope that was informative.
We have got a few questions coming in. Many thanks, Richard.
Okay.
If there's any difficult words in here, everybody will have to excuse my pronunciations. So, first question, what about dormancy seeding in the Highlands of Scotland?
Well, again, so your cold seeding, dormant seeding, what about it in the Highlands of Scotland? More work needs to be done. Again, we've had great success in the Northwest. We've had great success further down the country. Alan Thompson, our rep in Scotland, is keen to look at this in Scotland, and we started last year, but really, you know, more work needs to be done. But it's not inconceivable that it could work. It may work one year and not the next, but there is, yeah, certainly work needs doing, but I don't know who that was that asked that question, but contact Alan Thompson. We'd love to do something along those lines. You know, we may conclude that not for you, unfortunately, but you know, I think it's worth considering and looking at.
Okay, thank you. Hope that answers that question. So next question, as you are getting lateral growth from creeping bank grasses, will this lead to a higher thatch content if not maintained with a higher amount of maintenance?
No, we've not found that at all. I mean, if so long as you're on top of your verticutting and you're doing, then we haven't found that at all. No, it's you know, it's your what crawls is more thatch than purr at the end of the day. So no, we haven't found that. And again, I think this is the misnomer of years ago. People took a creeping bent grass, because we say these modern varieties cope on less nutrients, and they do. But I think as well, years ago, even older varieties of creeping bent were fed too much. It was an overkill approach. And I think again, if you're managing at reasonable rates of fertilizer, you're not getting that, you know, overly aggressive growth that's going to cause you a problem. So we haven't found it now, and we've been at it for 5 years now, you know, all over the country, and no one's had that issue.
Okay. I can't spring seed as the members don't like any disruption.
Well, again, I'd say you can make a very effective overseeding in the spring with, you know, just following light verticutting or aeration, just a light verticut, and then just brushing, maybe only 2 grams a square meter, just brushing with a top dressing, you know, and you're having an effect there. You're sowing into, you haven't got competition from the existing sward, so you can get an effective overseed there with just very, you know, something you're going to be doing anyway. So you don't need to sort of take it on in that respect with a full sort of overseed renovation.
And I like to overseed when I do my full renovation, all jobs in one hit. Is this something that can be done?
Well, it can be in the autumn, but again, it's all about, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. So you might like to do that, and there's no reason why you oughtn't. But what I'd say is, if you do that, then, and it works for you, then it's fine. But if you really want to win the battle, you ought to be looking at perhaps doing it at other times of the year as well.
Right, overseeding thatchy greens. Would you do it, or firstly deal with the thatch?
No, we wouldn't do it. I mean, I can count on the mic, you know, literally the number of times one of our reps has been and advised against it. So no, the way we approach it generally is, if you've got an issue, like a big, you've got to sort that. You've got to be, seed germinates in thatch, but it doesn't proliferate in thatch. So you're wasting money. Now you've got to get, if you know you've got a thatch problem, you need to be solving that, your agronomist, depending on how great it is, either punching through it, but you need to get that thatch layer down so that when you're overseeding, you're sowing into, you've got good seed soil contact, and those seedlings are going to proliferate. And this is, we would much rather someone, you know, bent grass is expensive stuff. We want you to get the full results from that. And in order to do that, you've got to be making sure you can give it what it deserves. So no, sort your thatch out first and then look to overseed after that.
Okay. Even I got that one. Sort it out first, then do it. Right. That brings us to the end of our questions. We'd like to thank you for joining us and hope that you'll join us again soon. I'll do a final thank you to Richard for the presentation and for answering all the questions. And for details about future Continue to Learn extra webinars, please visit the What's On page of the Bigger website.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.